And we're back with our second half of Earth First Radio for tonight. This is Uncle Dennis, and we're going to start off with a commentary by Oak. Oak is a frequent contributor to Earth First Radio, and you can be too. So if you'd like to contribute to Earth First Radio, stay tuned. We'll have contact address information later on in the show. I'd like to remind listeners to have paper and pencil ready, because you never know when something might pop up that you're interested in. So let's go and listen to this commentary about Congress people from Oak.
I find myself checking the date on the newspapers I browse through while reading the latest revelations about Trent Lott and his fellow travelers. Is it really the dawn of the 21st century? Have I time warped back to Mississippi 1950? The story about Lott being up to his bedsheets in what was once referred to as the Uptown Klan, as in Ku Klux Klan, an organization now going by the name of Council of Conservative Citizens, or CCC. CCC, KKK. I suppose I'm being terribly naive by saying it's hard to believe that a man with this kind of baggage is now the majority leader of the U.S. Senate. It must be the hopeless idealist in me, the small Cub Scout saluting the flag in the most serious manner. But isn't something awfully wrong in this picture? Then I look behind him, that sort of squeaky, clean self-parody in an expensive suit. Back there in the shadows I see Tom the Hammer DeLay, Bob Barr, Lindsey Graham, Helen Chenoweth, and a whole multitude of far-right backbenchers. Newt Gingrich himself referred to as the cannibals. Talk about the death of outrage. Never mind Bill Bennett's culture war. The real barbarians are already past the gates. They're on the hill, and they're wearing suits. Where's the outrage? If we must turn the clocks back, why stop in the 1950s, or even the 17th century when Puritans engaged in the first witch hunts to haunt these shores? Let's go all the way back to the Roman Empire, whose fate we seem to have headed for anyway. Bring on those cute little household gods, and throw this lot to the lions. Anyway, that's the view from this oak for Earth First Radio.
And thanks, Oak, for another great hunk of commentary. All right, let's jump right into animal news here. From British Columbia, we read that two men have been charged with a total of 27 counts of illegal trafficking, possession, and interprovincial transportation of bear gallbladders following a four-month investigation. Alberta resident Michael Burchard, 30, and Quebec resident Alain Burchard, 39, are the first people charged with these offenses under the Wildlife Act since the province introduced tougher penalties in June. The first offense conviction for these crimes now carries a $25,000 maximum fine and 6 months in jail or both. 16 charges fall under the Provincial Wildlife Act for illegal possession and trafficking of bear parts, while 11 charges have been laid under federal legislation for interprovincial transportation of bear parts. British Columbians want the killing and illegal trade of wildlife stopped, and the government is doing this by enforcing new legislation to deal with poaching, said Environment, Lands, and Parks Minister Joan Sawicki. These charges will send a message to illegal traffickers that this kind of wildlife abuse will not be tolerated in British Columbia. All right. And in other wildlife news, the world's fastest animal, the peregrine falcon, will be has been removed from the endangered species list, reflecting the success of a three-decade effort to repopulate the bird, which was almost wiped out by the pesticide DDT. We get the news from the LA Times. And in news from the Mediterranean Sea is facing ecological disaster if the countries lining its shores do not stop polluting its waters, Greenpeace warned this week. And environmental groups say the new dolphin-safe tuna standards taking effect next month amount to consumer fraud and predict dolphins will die in much larger numbers with the reintroduction of huge encircling nets. All right. Let's move to news from the States. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals last week upheld the August 1997 injunction against most logging in national forests in Texas, holding that the U.S. Forest Service violated sections of the National Forest Management Act, which protects soils, watersheds, and that the Forest Service failed to conduct required inventorying and monitoring of timber sales. According to Ned Fritz of the Texas Committee on Natural Resources, the ruling sets a national precedent for reform of clear-cutting and other forms of even-age logging that are depleting forest resources on federal lands throughout the country. TCONR and co-plaintiffs of the Sierra Club and the Wilderness Society will give court testimony September 16th on the motion to stop logging and prescribe burning on Longleaf Ridge, the largest remaining example of mature longleaf pine habitat in the country and a natural forest area long proposed by citizens groups for protection as a national recreation and wildlife area. The Forest Service has categorically excluded administrative appeals by citizens. And letters are needed in support of wilderness designation for the Black Rock Desert. Senators Bryan and Reed of Nevada have announced plans to introduce legislation to protect Black Rock and High Rock regions of northwest Nevada as natural conservation areas. The purpose of the NCA is to protect the historic Applegate-Lassen Emigrant Trail and its vistas. Conservationists, including Friends of Nevada Wilderness and the Toya B chapter of Sierra Club, are urging the senators to include 9 wilderness study areas, totaling 684,000 acres within the boundaries, and to designate them as wilderness. Conservationists are also urging the withdrawal of the area from mineral and geothermal development. Without these things, the vistas and ecosystems experienced by the original pioneers could be lost forever. Senators agree that wilderness designation may be a good idea, but they fear opposition that will develop if wilderness is included in their legislation. They need to know there is public support for designation of wilderness in the Black Rock Desert. Senators plan to introduce legislation following Interior Secretary Babbitt's visit to Black Rock Desert in September. What can you do? Contact Nevada Senators Harry Reid and Richard Bryan and let them know the following points: that you support the formation of a National Conservation Area, an NCA, but with the boundaries proposed by the conservation community, which includes the 9 wilderness study areas that form the horizon, as seen from the Emigrant Trail. You should request that the legislation provide the ultimate in protection for the lands around the trail by designating the BLM's 9 wilderness study areas as wilderness. It's time to stop studying them and get right on to business. You also request that the National Conservation Area language specifically remove the area from mineral and geothermal development as the best way to protect the pioneers' vistas, the area's famous hot springs, and other environmental values in the area. Send your letters soon. The Honorable Harry Reid, his address, 528 Hart Senate Building, Washington, D.C., 20510. That's the Honorable Harry Reid, 528 Hart Senate Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20510. The Honorable Richard Bryan, B-R-Y-A-N, 269 Russell Senate Building, Washington, D.C., 20510. That's the Honorable Richard Bryan, 269 Russell Senate Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20510. Let's see. If you want assistance or have further questions about what's going on, contact Ann Martin at AmericanLands.org. That's A-N-N-E-M at AmericanLands, all one word, .org. Or you can give her a call at 702-650-6542. That's 702-650-6542. Let's move to Oregon. The government has agreed not to oppose environmentalist demands for a court order blocking logging on 26 more national forest timber sales until they are surveyed for rare plants and wildlife. But the timber industry continues to oppose the motion for a temporary restraining order, arguing that it would impose an unnecessary hardship on wood mills in Oregon and Washington that depend on timber to keep working. U.S. District Judge William Dwyer in Seattle stopped 9 timber sales earlier this month, and Despite spending $8 million a year, the Forest Service had failed to fully follow the Northwest Forest Plan, which mandates surveys for 77 species of rare plants and wildlife before selling the timber. And this may sound a little positive, but the true status of what going on is that logging is continuing on about 10 of the 26 sales, including Deer Mom and Rhody, until the judge rules, hopefully very soon. This came out a couple of days ago, so hopefully some of you folks up there in Oregon can give me some more information about what went on this last week. So that's the deal. Logging continues in Oregon, even though the judge said no. What's the world to come to, huh? All right. Let's move to California. In California, last week, the Mojave National Preserve took a definitive step in the regulation of mining when it shut down operations at the Cima Cinder Mine. The National Parks and Conservation Association has been critical of the Park Service's management of this mine for some time. For over 2 years, they have argued that the preserve to bring Cima under full regulatory authority of the Mining and the Parks Act, the California Desert Protection Act, and the National Environmental Policy Act. The fact that the mine operators had neither an approved plan of operations nor completed a validity exam made the entire operation illegal. Despite our entreaties of the NPCA, however, the situation was not resolved. This changed when we took the drastic measure of informing the park that our only recourse would be to file suit against the Park Service for failing to fulfill their administrative mandate. Only then did the NPS fully analyze the issue. To their credit, they acted promptly and decisively. The mine operators were given notice that all operations must stop pending compliance with applicable law. One of the two operational mines in the Mojave Preserve inherited from the Bureau of Land Management, the Cima Mine is a study in the difficulty of bringing National Park Service authority to bear on newly created parks. In the case of Mojave, the Park Service had to apply its preservation mandate to an area where the BLM managed for multiple uses, including mining. To be fair, the park was initially hampered in making the transition by lack of staff, minimal funding, and a sensitive political environment. At the time, diplomacy was the best course of action, but eventually the defense showed the deference showed to the miners was abused and the mine continued to impair park resources. It was clearly time to close the mine, and the National Park Service should be applauded for its action. And we get this news from the Pacific Regional Office of the National Parks and Conservation Association, and we thank them for providing it. They can be reached at P.O. Box 1289, Oakland, California, 94604. That is the National Parks and Conservation Association, P.O. Box 1289, Oakland, California, 94604. Or try calling them 510-839-9922. That's 510-839-9922. Or visit their website at www.npca.org. That's www.npca.org. And thank them for their wonderful work. All right, here is the Headwaters Forest Update for August 21st. Urgent action. Critical Assembly vote on the Forest Reform Bill. The weak enforcement provisions of California's forestry laws create an incentive to log illegally, leading to substantial habitat and water quality damage. Fines for breaking the law are limited to $1,000 and require full criminal convictions before they can be assessed, encouraging scofflaw operators to ignore the law and reap huge profits from illegal logging. Can you imagine a $1,000 fine for cutting down a $20,000 tree? Doesn't make sense to me. State Senator Byron Scheer's Senate Bill 621 would help correct this problem by allowing the California Department of Forestry to assess civil penalties for violations of the state's logging rules. The fines established by the bill are high enough to create real financial deterrence. Senate Bill 621 has already passed the state Senate and a key assembly policy committee, but two more tough votes lie ahead. The timber industry is vehemently opposed to the measure. Of course they are. They're criminals, which came before the Assembly Appropriations Committee Wednesday, August 25th. There's no good argument for allowing the industry to make thousands of dollars routinely ignoring the laws that protect California's water, fisheries, and wildlife. If you live in California or you care about California, please contact assembly members in this state immediately and ask for his or her support for Senate Bill 621. The bill must pass the full assembly before the legislative session ends on September 10th. It's time to end illegal logging in California. If you're not sure how to get in touch with your California Assembly member, call the state government information line at 916-322-9900. That's 916-322-9900, or visit their website at www.assembly.ca.gov. That's assembly.ca.gov. In other California news, the California Board of Forestry met earlier this month to discuss changes to the state's logging rules proposed by the administration of Governor Gray Davis. The rules were proposed in response to growing public concern over the logging-related increase in sedimentation and temperature of California's forest streams and the resulting decline of salmon populations. Since their release in July, however, many conservationists have criticized the new rules because they are not strong enough to protect and restore water quality and salmon populations. Despite these shortcomings, National Marine Fisheries Service, the federal agency responsible for conserving threatened and endangered salmon, those officials have acknowledged that the rules may form the basis of wide-ranging exemption from the Endangered Species Act protections for salmon. The governor's rules would allow many destructive industry practices to continue. For example, the current practice of logging over entire watersheds in less than a decade would remain unrestricted, as would extensive logging in many unstable and landslide-prone areas. The streamside buffer zone proposed in the rules have been widened slightly, but they still allow extensive logging and will not facilitate recovery of mature conifer forests along salmon stream. Cumulative impacts are ignored, despite mountains of evidence that the current system isn't working. And finally, the new rules apply only to watersheds where water quality is already impaired and salmon are already in trouble, allowing other healthier watersheds to be degraded even further. And in response to this, the Board of Forestry will continue to discuss the proposed rules and a more positive alternative at its next meeting, and that's August 30th through September 1st, early next week. Written comments to the rules will be accepted until September 7th, and the board has scheduled a full public hearing on September 14th. Here's the details. You can send your letters to the Board of Forestry and Fire Protection. Attention, Dennis O. Hall, Regulations Coordinator, the P.O. Box 944246. In Sacramento, California, and the zip code 94244. Once again, that's the Board of Forestry and Fire Protection. Attention, Dennis O. Hall, Regulations Coordinator, P.O. Box 944246 in Sacramento, California, 94244. And be sure to include the note that you are writing concerning the protection of threatened and impaired watersheds, 1999. Once again, the hearing begins at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, September 14th in the auditorium of the Resources Building. That address is 1416 9th Street in Sacramento. Parking's a problem, so get there early. Whether you appear in person or submit written comments, it's important to make the following points. Proposed rules are insufficient to meet the standards of the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act, which would prohibit harm to endangered species and degradation of water quality. The proposed rules fail to improve analysis of cumulative impacts from multiple logging operations on fish, flooding, water quality, and other watershed values. And the board should revise the proposed rules in accordance with the alternative for meeting legal standards for water quality and salmon and come into full compliance with federal laws. All right. So that's the Headwaters update and action alert. Hop on it. Moving to the Sierra, the U.S. Forest Service appears ready to make it official. The Quincy Library Group plan would more than double logging operations on 2.5 million acres of Las and Plumas and Tahoe National Forests. This is not news to listeners of Earth First Radio. It would carve another 100 miles of logging roads in the Sierra Nevada. So much for Dianne Feinstein's assurance in her letter of May 8, 1998, that the Quincy plan would, quote, not radically increase logging activities as opponents claim. It would simply replace current logging with more intelligent planned approaches aimed at developing a more fire-resilient landscape. Uncle Dennis says bullshit. The U.S. Forest Service plan expected to be released would sanction the most ambitious option of cutting 319 million board feet a year, and that's a radical increase from the current 125 million board feet.
Man, there's some folks working on this, including Representative George Miller of Martinez and Senator Barbara Boxer of our senator from California. So get in touch with folks in California and Washington, D.C. Let them know what you think about that. Let's move into some international news here. Environmental groups criticize governments around the world for failing to control commercial timber logging, which they said devastated precious rainforests and wildlife. Government inertia and hollow promises made by the timber industry have failed to control unsustainable logging, and without radical changes, there are limited prospects that they will do so, the group said in a report. 7 years after world leaders pledged at the UN Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, to protect global environments, the report said logging threatens the survival of species including gorillas, chimpanzees, jaguar, ocelot, and many already rare birds such as the toco toucan and the hyacinth macaw. Logging destroys forest communities from Brazil to the Solomon Islands, causes flooding, soil erosion, and fire, and exacerbates the threat of climate change. Governments show no political will to regulate the industry effectively, said the Coalition of Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace International, Environmental Defense Fund, Rainforest Foundation, and the Retten Regenwald. That's the German version of Save the Rainforest. Oh, man. It's going on everywhere. And here's more international news. Activists and Starbucks strike a shady deal. Coffee drinkers are being given a chance to help change the way coffee is grown. This month, Conservation International and Starbucks began a joint venture to promote coffee grown in the shade, a technique that also preserves ecosystems by not clearing out tropical rainforests. And in climate news, new research suggests that emissions from ships at sea may account for almost half the amount of sulfur found in the atmosphere over the world's oceans. Previous studies have overlooked this human effect on the atmosphere, meaning that current models of global climate change may be flawed. Scientists creating models of global climate change have concentrated on the effects of humans on land. Researchers knew that there was a great deal of sulfur in the air over the oceans, potentially affecting climate change, but assumed that natural forces had produced the sulfur. What has been miscalculated is how much has been contributed by humans, Spyros Pandis told Environmental News Service. Pandis is an engineering professor of Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh and author of this study published August 18th in the journal Nature. Sulfate aerosols, tiny drops of sulfur compounds in the air, reflect sunlight away from the Earth's surface. They also increase cloud formation, which further shields the Earth from the sun. Together, the aerosols and clouds force a reduction in global temperature, an effect called radiative forcing. Radiative forcing is a measurement of the amount of energy contributed to the Earth by a substance like a greenhouse gas. Greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide cause positive radiation forcing because they increase the energy on the Earth's surface, but sulfate aerosols decrease the energy reaching Earth, causing negative radiative forcing. Decreasing energy ultimately means decreased temperatures. Now, that's not an altogether great thing to have happen because these sulfur aerosols cause acid rain. So that's our climate news for today. And we're going to move into dam news. This is news from American Rivers, and we want to thank them for providing this. Let's talk about California, the Lang Ranch Project on Lang Creek in California. The Lang Ranch Dam Project, proposed by the City of Thousand Oaks, the Ventura County Flood Control District, and developers, has met with strong opposition from local homeowners. The project meant to provide flood protection for Lang Ranch housing development, but opponents point out the project will destroy a Chumash Indian cemetery, raise an old oak tree grove, and disturb local wildlife. And opponents also feel the residents have been duped into paying for this project when they move into the area. Oh, boy. And then there's the Mataliha Dam on Mataliha Creek. The U.S. Department of Interior, along with state officials and representatives from Ventura County, came together last month to plan and launch a study that will determine the cost and feasibility of removing the Mataliha Dam. The 51-year-old dam has an estimated 6.1 million cubic yards of sediment accumulated behind it, making it unable to fulfill its intended function of flood control. Proponents of the dam removal believe that it's one of the most important benefits of allowing the Mataliha to flow freely is that habitat it would provide for endangered steelhead trout. And potential removal of the Engelbreit Dam on the South Fork of the Yuba River is progressing steadily. CalFed, the state federal agency focusing on restoration and water management of the Bay Delta system, began a stakeholder collaborative process last May, which will determine the fate of Engelbreit Dam and the South Fork of the Yuba. It's a major water course flowing into the Bay Delta system. Well, that's about all the dam news that I've got for tonight. To get news announcements or comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send anything else to Earth First Radio at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. All right. For more in-depth news and information about Earth First Radio, or about Earth First Movement in general, you can subscribe to the Earth First Journal. They're at the P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in again. You can catch us on the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's radioforall.web.net. And the 4 in there is the number 4. You'll need a sound card, but everything else is free on the website. We're going to check out a song by Daryl Cherney off tape he had called Timber. This one's called The Arizona Power Line.
So they sent in Michael Tate, a phony Vietnam veteran vowed to guard the fascist state. Well, he won their trust and friendship, to his flaws they all were blind, till those flares lit up the skies above the Arizona power lines. Oh, ain't it grand, out in the desert with a blowtorch in your hands. Oh, take it slow, it could all come crashing down on you, you know. They arrested Dave Foreman, they said he was behind the scheme. Well, they jailed the founder of Earth First, but they did not stop the dream. So should you walk at Abbey's desert and see a little flame that shines, don't just say a prayer for the next to dare the Arizona power lines. Oh,